Welcome back to the Matter of Facts podcast on the Prepper Broadcasting Network. We talk prepping, guns, and politics every week on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify. Go check out our content at mwfpodcast.com on Facebook or Instagram. You can support us via Patreon or by checking out our affiliate partners. I'm your host, Phil Rabley, and my co-host, Andrew Bobo, is on the other side of the mic, and here's your show. And welcome back to the Matter of Facts podcast. I might be muting myself every now and then because I've caught a cold again. It's not going to kill me. Andrew's rolling his eyes and telling me, be a man and get over it, and I will.
Well, you're always sick.
First of all, it's allergy season down here. And second of all, my wife had a cold, and I kind of live with her. Huh?
So when is it not allergy season in the South?
For about 4 weeks between January and February, when everything dies. But I digress. Anyway, we have a guest, Sam. You and Andrew have met each other in person, so he actually knows what you look like. I'm just going to envision someone with, like, glorious facial hair and a bursting knowledge of amateur radio. How close was I?
That sounds pretty close.
Yeah.
Call out.
So introduce yourself to the listeners, man. Like, as much as I know about you at this stage is Trek said I should have you on the show, and that's really about all the endorsement I need. And you apparently teach people how to talk to people using sorcery.
Yep. I teach radios with MDFI, with their Baofeng Basics course. I use radios every day and kind of just fell in love with them back in high school. And I've been part of ham ever since, going on 10 years now, on and off. Baofeng's got really big back during COVID, and people kept asking me how to use them, so I built this kind of course to teach them how to use them.
Yeah, and so, it's a good course because I should just take it again because it was a course that got me really interested in learning radios, and I was like all about it for like a month, and then I'm just like then as time went on, and I really don't have anybody to talk to, so I kind of was like, meh. So now I'm like, oh well, just kind of focus on other things. But
so can I assume that this is my license to bully you into getting back in amateur radio?
No, because I still can't talk to you over it. So,
but you might. There are ways.
Well, yeah, if I got like high frequency stuff.
Except I'm not invested in HF, so that's not going to do any good.
Exactly. So that means you got to get invested in HF.
See, my problem, and like Andrew and I have already had this conversation, Sam, and I think you and I might have talked about it offline, but like what drove me into GMRS really was the fact that like there are two people that are, you know, my wife and daughter, and they are by default members of my group. And if I can't talk to them on it, it's not useful to me. And I love
GMRS, so now get ham so that you can talk to further people away.
Well, see, that's part of the gig. But the reason I'm getting more invested in GMRS is mostly because it allows me to talk to the two of them. And a GMRS license covers, like, the whole family, basically, whereas a ham license really only covers you.
The GMRS is, like, a really nice low barrier of entry. We talked about it offline, and, you know, it's $40 for the license, and then you can get a GMRS radio and... But GMRS, you can go up to 50 watts of transmit power, whereas like FRS and MERS are limited to like two watts.
Mm-hmm.
You can get a lot out of a really cheap radio.
Yeah, I mean, I personally think GMRS is the only real downside for GMRS, other than the fact that like because it's channelized, you are kind of like, yeah, I could see where in a large metro area you could get to the point where you can't find a free channel to talk on because there could potentially be so many people talking on a limited number of channels. But I also think that, like, just by its very nature, because it's UHF, you're always going to be a little bit range limited by that. But I'll be honest, like in the short time I've gotten really heavily invested in GMRS and UHF, and I've started learning more and more about it, I've been very impressed by the distance it will transmit, which I think is because I came into this with very realistic expectations. You know what I mean? Like when you get the bubble pack radios from Walmart and they say they'll talk 35 miles and I just want to strangle whoever wrote it on the box, because I'm like, there's no way on earth this thing is going to go 35 miles, not even in lab conditions, not even on the surface of the moon. It's not possible.
I don't know. I think, like, even in the city, you'd be surprised by how empty those GMRS channels are. Even in areas where there's, like, a really decent amount of radioactivity, it's still... Those that are really active in radio typically have their ham license and they're on repeaters. Whereas the GMRS, it's pretty quiet.
Yeah. And, I mean, I guess that's kind of what I have noticed is that, like, usually when I'm just bumping around town, I'll flip my radio I'll flip the mobile in my truck on, and I'm dialed into the nearest large-scale repeater, which is in New Orleans. I mean, I'm 2.5 miles north of Lake Pontchartrain, plus 25 miles, give or take, to the other side of the lake, to where that repeater's located. So, like, I would always say that with a 20-watt mobile, I'm within the range of that repeater, because thank God it's 600 feet up in the air, but I'm not firmly within the umbrella under which I can get a strong signal all the time. Like, depending on where in town I am, I can't transmit to it, but I can still hear it sometimes. But a majority of the traffic I hear on that is actually coming in off of GMRS Live, because that repeater is hooked up to a GMRS Live node. Like, when I listen to local repeater traffic where people are identifying that they're from, like, Metairie, Marrero, and some of the burgs of New Orleans, that's a very small group. And once you get off of that repeater channel on the simplex, you're right. I mean, it's pretty quiet.
The new, like, internet connected repeaters are badass. Mm-hmm. You can get into all sorts of different areas because they're just connected to the internet. So you can talk to, like, I talked to some guy that was out in Utah through a repeater last week. But obviously, you know, my UHF radio cannot reach that far. So it's all just through the internet repeater. It's awesome.
Yeah, when I first got my 20-watt mobile stood up, and I quickly radio checked it before I, like, started drilling holes and really stuffing stuff down. But I did a quick repeater check just to see if anybody was listening, and had a real quick conversation with a guy from Florida. And again, it was all through GMRS Live. So, I mean, I think from the hobbyist perspective, or from the being able to gather intelligence from a long distance away, I think things like internet-connected GMRS repeaters are extremely useful. It's interesting to me to be able to spread that network out, and it wouldn't take much more than a little bit of coordination from you and some friends who happen to be utilizing repeaters that are networked together via the internet to be able to chat back and forth literally across the country. I mean, the capability is there to do it. The only problem with that, which I pointed out the first time we talked about comms, and I'll continue to point it out, is if you pump it out into the airwaves, it's not private. Like, anybody that tells you you can have private comms minus some really inventive work, it's just not there. It's not there for radio. Like, if you spit it up into the atmosphere, somebody could be listening.
Yeah, it can get into, like, some forms of digital that are, like, talk rooms, but those are really just filtering out other radios and not blocking yours from getting out. You can get into, like, the, oh, what's it called? Astro 25 Motorola form of encryption, but that's illegal according to the FCC.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, there are a great many things that piss the FCC off that I would, in the interest of not upsetting three-letter agencies, I will only say that, like, everything I've ever read in the FCC's rules pretty clearly dictates in an emergency situation, everything is green. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you are calling for help, or if it is an emergency, you are greenlit to stamp on every rule, to get on whatever frequency you want, to do whatever you have to do so you can call for help. So I'm not saying that as license for people to ignore the FCC's regulations. I'm just saying that if it's an emergency, like, you know, take the rule book and temporarily put it in the circular bin and do what you gotta do.
Yeah. It's cool that they have that rule written in. It's if you have it, use it.
Yeah. Although even that being said, though, like I cringe whenever I hear people that get into amateur radio, whether it's MERS or GMRS or ham, they get the radio, they may or may not get the license, and then the next thing they say is, well, I'll figure it out when the flag goes up. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't want to invest the time to learn this thing. I'll take the time to learn to use this thing in the middle of an emergency, and I immediately get really squeamish about that. Like, that's the whole reason why I've been really particular with my wife and daughter. Like, we've been using FRS radios mostly for years. And if for no other reason than just the fact that, like, if you don't use the daggum thing, you don't know how to use it properly. And I've been teaching my daughter since she was about, I don't know, 7 or 8, like, hey, this is how you change channels. This is radio etiquette. You have to hold the PTT down for a count to one before you start talking, like, basic radio stuff, because I want her to know how to use that. And now that we've made this move into GMRS, the radios have a lot more buttons. They're a little bit more complicated. And I am having to tell my 11-year-old now, almost teenager, who wants nothing to do with this thing, I'm like, look, you're going to have to learn enough of this to get by. Because I might need to talk to you, and your mom might need to talk to you. You don't have to dig into it like I have as a hobby. You don't have to, you know, like, learn how to program this silly thing. But you have to know how to make it work so you can call your dad if you need to. And, you know, I've taken a lot of the same personality with her and with communications as I have with a lot of other preparedness skills, where I've said, if it's not your thing, you don't have to learn as much of it as I have, but you have to learn enough to get by.
When no, she gets that was... for a cell phone, give her a ham radio instead, or a GMRS radio instead of a cell phone.
Then that's a great point for anyone who wants to get into radios for, like, preparedness. Just try to go a week without your phone. And sure, it's just taking notes of, like, oh, I really wish I could have contacted X person. I know, like, when AT&T went down, there are a lot of people that just couldn't tell their friends or family what was going on.
Dude, there were people that were acting like they were going to jump out of windows when they couldn't check their Instagram status. Like, I don't know. Like, I have this personality where, like, because of my job and because of the things I do for a living, like, I am forced to be connected to all my coworkers during business hours. My phone is ringing with text messages and calls throughout the day. I have a focus on my iPhone set that literally prohibits anyone from contacting me except for Andrew, my wife, my daughter, and, like, my family. And that's it. Everybody else has to wait until 3:30 in the afternoon because I just can't take the time away. And the only reason Andrew's on that list, even though he never calls me because he doesn't like me very much, is, well, I am always working. But my point is, the only reason you're on the list is because sometimes you reach out to me in the middle of the day and it's podcast related stuff. It's stuff that I can take, like, 5 minutes and answer a quick question and I can move on. You and I aren't going to sit there and have a 45 minute long conversation during work hours.
You hang up. No, you hang up.
You make it sound like we're dating, which is weird.
Well, I think it's worse.
But anyway.
Awkward.
Awkward. But yeah, I mean, but because of all that, like, the idea of not being able to call people on my cell phone is actually amazingly refreshing. And I look forward to going camping because I'm going to be so far in the middle of nowhere, my cell phone's not going to work reliably. Like, that to me is a good time when there's nothing that runs on electrons that works. It's just me and maybe the humming of the compressor on my 12-volt fridge and, you know, coffee and cigars and peace and quiet and birds and squirrels. But we do live in a hyper-connected age where everybody wants to be able to reach into their pocket and pull out their cell phone and call people from around the country. And I find that given the world we live in, conversations about comms inevitably go in one of two directions. Either A, there is that group of people who are so overwhelmed by the information, they don't know, like, it's difficult to get the information across to them in a format they can accept and digest. Or you get the people who say, I have a cell phone. You know what I'm saying, Sam? Like, it's so, even after the AT&T outage, it's still so difficult to get people to understand that they need to have a backup form of communication because cell phones are so reliable and they are so ubiquitous. Bearing in mind that, like, okay, you're 10 years past high school. Andrew and I probably got at least 10 years on you. But, like, I didn't get my first cell phone until I was 19 years old. I paid for it myself. I grew up in this weird time between the millennials and Gen Xers where, like, people didn't have – cell phones were something that only a few people had. Like, beepers were more common back then when I was younger. And it was this time when the only way you were going to find your kids half the time was to yell out the front door or, like, call their friends and see where they – you know, find out who had seen them last. And to go from where I grew up to now where everybody has a cell phone, they almost always work. Like even in the most secluded areas, can you get one or two bars on a cell phone signal? It's hard to get through to some people and make them understand like, hey, that thing might stop working one day. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. A couple months before I had started the class, I had my phone died, just bricked itself. And I wasn't able to get one for a week. And that entire week, I was like, oh, really wish I could tell my girlfriend I can't come home right after work. And I just had no way to do that. And I think like that experience alone would be a really good eye-opener for some where it's all the very small sort of communications that you can't do that sometimes hit the most.
Mm-hmm.
No. I mean, for somebody trying to get into ham, I mean, what's one of the easiest ways for someone to get into ham?
It might sound silly, but YouTube. There is so many good things on YouTube to look into. And there are some bad channels out there, like anything on YouTube. But what a lot of people do on YouTube and those channels is that they'll actually show what they're doing with the radio that you can't always get from like books or other publications online.
And a radio to recommend, basically it's pretty easy to use, is the Baofeng UB5R, correct?
Yeah. There's a lot of contention in certain communities about the UB5R, but there's so much stuff out there for it, books, YouTube channels that are just dedicated to that, that it's really easy to get a baseline for it and start using it right away. I know there's that NC Scout guy that has complete manuals on Amazon.
Gorilla Guide to Baofeng Radio?
Yeah, for the UV5R.
Mm-hmm.
No,
we talked about it on this show not too long ago. It's a cool book. It's not just for the Baofeng UB5R either. Like, there's discussions in there about ComSec and about how to build Gorilla or how to build jungle antennas. I mean, it's an awesome book for anybody that hasn't read it.
There's also the technician class, ham radio prep books by Gordon West. Mm-hmm. Those things help me more than anything else. The way the questions and explanations are broke down are awesome.
So what I mean, what's a common mistake that you find that people do with the ham? Like, what's one of the mistakes that you find?
It's the failure to prep beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
Radios are really easy, and I cover it in the class for about half of it. Is just getting the radio ready before you even step out the door or go use it. A lot of my friends in particular will show up if we're out camping or whatever and just hand the radio to me to program it. I can't get it set up to the same level as mine because I either don't have my computer or I don't have all the things to program it beyond the front panel programming. Mm-hmm. To get it to the same level, especially when it comes to like digital radios, like the Yaesu's, DMR radios, stuff like that.
Yeah. And I mean, that does bear pointing out. Cause like, that's one of the things that I was very insistent on when I got into radios was I wanted to learn how to program as much of them as humanly possible by hand on the front panel using the, you know, using the keypad on the mic. Like, I'd never wanted to be completely subservient to having to have a programming cable and a laptop to change something on these things. But I am finding the more I dig into it, way above and beyond just ease of use to type it all out and then push a program. It is like with a lot of these radios, I'm finding there are notable features that you will not access, and they cannot be done, or they cannot be done easily through the keypad. Like, having a laptop and a program cable and knowing how to do that is definitely a skill that's worth having. But I think it's also super important for people to understand, like, how to operate the radio beyond turn it on and hit the button. You know what I mean?
Yeah. When you get into the more less user-friendly radios, like, some of the Motorolas are really difficult to program, even on the computer. The software is less than ideal. Or even my Yaesu mobile radio, I really struggled getting that one set up. Just because I didn't have all these publications that are out there, like the UV5R. You know, you just have the user manual.
Yeah, and I mean, that is one thing that kind of bears pointing out is, like, I've gotten very heavily invested in, like, a web forum and several Facebook groups specific to GMRS, and I see at least once a week I see a person come in who's looking for help programming a radio or setting up an antenna or doing something, and the first thing they butt heads with is the fact that they don't have any local friends who can help walk them through the process. Like, the communities around individual pieces of gear or around ham and GMRS are so robust. And at least in my experience with the GMRS side, they tend to be filled with people that really do want to be helpful and help you figure out your problem. You know, like, I haven't found a ton of gatekeepers in the GMRS world.
No, I think a lot of the guys at the radio want to talk gear. They want to help you out the best they can.
Kind of like the preparedness world, man. I mean, we've had that discussion several times about how you show up around a campfire and start talking techniques or gear, whatever else, and we're going to get into it pretty quickly, because, like, these are communities that don't like to hoard the information they have. They want to spread it. They want it to grow, because, like, if we don't, then these communities all die with us. And that's just not going to work. It's not why any of us got into these. It's not why you started teaching. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you didn't want to spread your knowledge, you would have kept it to yourself.
Right. Yeah. It goes hand in hand with the gun world, man. You want to talk about the shiny toys. You want to show other people how to use it. Even just so you can talk to them later about it, hopefully on the radio.
Yeah. So talk me through, like, I'm curious how you went from, you know, like, in high school you got bit by the radio bug, and how did you transition from that to standing up in front of other curious radio nerds and teaching classes about how to use a Baofeng?
Like, so I was part of the Civil Air Patrol in high school, really big into it. And where the radio bug bit me was in like the Search and Rescue Academy, that's where all of our communications through a radio that was bounced from an airplane back to someone else, or just from person to person. And I went into the workforce, and where now I manage 50 some radios at work, and I see the same thing over and over and over, where person doesn't care what I'm trying to tell them at the beginning of the day, when I'm tanning the radio, and then they have to come back to me with, like, within an hour. It's like, oh, my radio doesn't work. It's just tuned to the wrong channel. So going from that, and then Trek actually pulled me out of our crowd because he saw me with some sort of radio equipment on. I don't even remember what it was. And he just asked for help with his radios, and off it went.
Somehow that origin story doesn't shock me. That Trek just saw you with a piece of gear on and immediately like it was like, that's a person that knows something I need to know.
But that's pretty much what happened. I don't even remember what it was, but he invited me up one day to talk about it with him and some of the other cadre, and off it went.
Yeah, I remember, because I remember I was helping him around his house one day, and we were talking about ham, you know, ham and all that stuff. And I remember him telling me about the, about you, you know, about how he had you come up and talk to him and his guys. And, you know, you guys, he basically ran you through a bunch of stuff and how to do it. And then, I remember him saying, I remember him saying something about a class. And then all of a sudden, like, popped up on their website, was like, hey, the, ham basics, ham 101, you know, kind of thing. So, yeah, it was interesting to see. It was really cool. It was really cool seeing. Like I said, I think I took one of your first classes last year, and you break things down really well to where it was easy to understand. I think you got some really good feedback from people, and I mean, I hope that people kind of took it and ran with it and learned more. I mean, I know, like I said, it kind of got me. It kind of got a bug in me, and you know, I need to. I don't know. Maybe I just need to connect with you some more since you're not far from me. You know, just to kind of get back into it.
Yeah, I can't peer pressure him very well from halfway across the country.
See, with the proper UHF VHF setup, I bet you could. We'll get that set up sometime.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing is just got to figure out how to, I just got to figure out how to do it. And, you know, if I start doing, I'm just so hands-on to where like, I'm not big into like just reading and I hate watching. I mean, I don't mind watching videos every once in a while, like YouTube and stuff like that, and like the how-tos and everything. But when it comes to doing it, I'm just like, can someone just come show me? Like, I learn more like when someone's actually showing me and I can do it hands-on versus, all right, I'm just going to read this manual and hopefully I don't fall asleep.
Yeah, I mean, it is also one of the cool parts about ham is that you can kind of just try it out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you both have a set frequency and during certain weather conditions, you're like, all right, well, I'm going to try it right now. Just tell me if you hear me. I know me and my buddy have done that just from here to another town about an hour and a half south of me.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you can, sometimes you can't. Just with just 50 watts from my man pack, he just has a hand talkie, so he can't talk back, but he can hear it sometimes. Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
No, I mean that is, I guess, one thing that I feel like that's the one place where like we have to the conversation has to turn at some point is like, you know, our podcast is largely focused around like the preparedness community, and by extension we dip our toe into lots of different subjects, but like from the preparedness standpoint, like I think what a lot of our listeners are probably concerned about, and I know that I've had at least one who has expressed like, I know I need to do this. I know I need to invest time in it, but it's overwhelming. And I don't understand it. But like most people in the preparedness community are looking for, how do I talk to people that I'm not standing right next to? And so when we start talking about like off-grid communications, we're accepting the fact that cell phones, modern conveniences and incredible pieces of tech that they are all beholden to a network of antennas scattered around the country. As a matter of fact, I was talking to my wife the other day because we were driving up to my brother and my sister-in-law's for a baby shower. And we just happened, like in the middle of nowhere in Mississippi, we just happened to pass a cell phone tower. And I pointed out to my wife, probably more information than she wanted to know, but I started explaining to her like why the antennas are arranged the way they are and why they're the size they are. And she glazed over, but she humored me. But anyway, but like I pointed out to her, I'm like, you know, you have to understand that like the frequency range that cell phones operate in is even higher than UH. It's even higher than like GMRS radios. It's above UHF frequencies. And as a result, the range is even less. So the only way you have a cell phone signal everywhere is because these towers are scattered all over the place. Like you can't go anywhere in the freaking civilized world and not find a couple of them. And so I'm always pointing out to her, I'm like, every one of those towers is an opportunity to have service or not have service. Every one of those towers is an opportunity to get on this side of a hill or a mountain, and now you don't have a signal. Like, I'm just trying to get people to understand that, like, yes, as ubiquitous as cell phones are and as well as they work, they're still based on an infrastructure that is incredibly complicated. And if the AT&T outage has taught us anything, an infrastructure that is so complicated doesn't take much to choke it to death.
Right. I mean, a cell phone is just radio. That's all it is. And then if you can decentralize it into your, now instead of relying on a different network, you just have your own network. Mm-hmm. Just at a lower frequency. You know, the police radios, they use a frequency range that is very similar to cellular, and they all rely on different repeaters to do the exact same thing.
Yeah. Chad Snow is in the chat saying, I'd be interested in talking to a local guy about ham. I'm just south of Bobo. You should look into MDFI's ham radio class, and then you can beat Sam. But anyway. But yeah, I mean, so we talked about kind of like where you envision people getting started. And, you know, I feel like the Baofeng, whether you, no matter what flavor you're talking about, if you're talking about ham or GMRS, I feel like the Baofeng gets a gateway drug, man. It's the pot that gets you into all the hard stuff because they're freaking stupid cheap. They're not the hardest thing on earth to friggin' work with. And there's just such a there's such a community base out there for you to lean on to learn how to use them. But beyond that initial step of getting a Baofeng handheld, like, where would you send a person to kind of navigate them through if they start there and they say, I want more?
My next recommendation is always, like, you have the Baofeng. If you then look into a more robust analog, like a mobile radio or something, that opens a bunch of doors. They can also look into like a digital hand talkie. It kind of depends on the person and from where they're coming from. If it's just Joe Schmo from work, I just like, all right, well, how about GMRS? How about a GMRS mobile radio set up in your truck? And that usually gets people going pretty quickly. It's such a low barrier of entry. It's so much fun to find someone and talk to them. And they're super easy to set up.
Yeah. I was about to ask a question of, do you feel like GMRS is easier to set up than ham? And I don't know about programming wise, but like, you know, the thing about GMRS that makes it so user-friendly is the fact that it is channelized. And those radios come out of the box set up for those channels. I mean, you're literally a couple of tones away from being able to talk to a repeater straight out of the box. And I just don't think ham radios are, like, out of the box that ready to go and that user-friendly.
No, I mean, with your standard ham radio, you're looking at a blank canvas. Whereas, like, a GMRS radio, there's at least some numbers to color by where you have your channels. They're super easy to find. If you type in GMRS repeater, they're super easy to find. They just come out of the box ready to go for you. Just like you said.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, there are online, at least for GMRS, there are online forums that have lists of all the local repeaters and everything. And even for those that don't publish their tones, most radios give you the ability to search for a tone once you lock onto a frequency. So I'm just saying, you don't necessarily have to talk to the repeater owner and get the tone. You can figure it out without having to brute force your way through all the frequencies. Don't do that to yourself. You'll hate yourself really, really badly if you try that. But
yeah, repeater book is a really nice resource for finding repeaters. What you can also do is if you go to different repeaters, you can ask other people for the tones for whatever repeater you're trying to get to. I've done that a few times now for a repeater near me where I wasn't sure what the tone was. I went to the repeater close to it and just called around. Whenever someone else was talking, I'd wait till they finished, call up, ask for the tone, and I got it. Someone else knew it.
Yeah, and on the GMRS side, like I usually default back to mygmrs.com because they have a very, very robust listing of repeaters, and I have not found one yet where anybody was really shy or persnickety about giving me the tones on request. Matter of fact, Andrew, I found a repeater. I don't know if I'll be able to hit it from prepper camp in September, but it's close enough that I'm going to try. And I reached out to that repeater owner and basically just told me, like, hey, I'm going to be in your neck of the woods end of September. Can I get your tone so I can try to link up to your repeater? He gave it to me, said, hey, look forward to talking to you. Of course, the other reason I reached out to him is because when we get a little bit closer, I'm going to politely inquire, what simplex frequency can I get on in that area? And I have the least chance of pissing somebody off if we have a shite load of people from prepper camp all talking back and forth. You know what I'm saying? Like, I suspect if we get on like one through seven, you know, like the 5-watt channels, I imagine we'll probably keep our noses pretty clean there. But at some point, I kind of want to get onto the 50-watt channel and find and, like, you know, stand up my simplex repeater and see how it does for policing the whole campground. My only worry then is that if I wind up screwing with another repeater, I'm not really being a good good guest in their area.
Mm-hmm.
But
I wish I could. I mean, I guess maybe you could figure it out with, again, YouTube University. But basically, like, set up our own repeater at prepper camp to have guy, you know, to basically connect that everybody could just connect to, and you know, you keep it. Try to make it to where you could try to keep it within reason, like monitored or secluded, so not just anybody can log in or can grab it. It's just basically our group or something like that, but.
I mean, I basically plan to do that with the GMRS.
Mm-hmm. But Sam, I mean, so what's your license level that you have?
Just technician.
Just technician.
Yep.
Are you plans to go higher?
Yeah, yeah. I took the winter to study to go for extra, but we'll see. I didn't do too well on the old practice tests.
Yeah.
It'll take time.
Yeah. No, I'm sure it will. So, I mean, anybody who, like, so I guess if you can explain for the listeners who might not know what the different levels of the ham licensure and then, you know, what it can cover.
Yeah, there are three licenses now. It used to be four, but it got rolled into different certifications,
mm-hmm.
or classes, however you like to phrase it. And with each new class that you get more privileges to different frequencies and bandwidths. Mm-hmm. So I don't quite remember what the extra.
Let me search it up real quick. Yeah, I know. I mean, extra can go, it's pretty high.
If I had my dad handy, he could probably tell you this off the top of his head. He's had an extra license since I was born. I'm going to get him on the show one of these days. He's a very private person, but, you know, I'm determined I'm going to get him on the show one day.
Yeah, for the amateur extra, they get like 80 meters, 40 meters, some really HF stuff that is really cool that I'd love to try out sometime. That's really pushing the distance with that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, that's nuts. It is pretty crazy with what you can do with ham, and I'm even GMRS with it. You know how far you can go with the stretch and what you can do. But I mean, yeah, that's the thing is, I guess it would have been interesting to have this available. Just like when you know, when you got hit by that hurricane, Phil, and basically it's like, okay, well, trying to reach out to in-laws and stuff to make sure you're doing okay. Well, it's one of those things where if we had the high frequency to where I know you were out of power, but once you got the Jenny and all that stuff, or even currently, you know, it's one of those things, like if you got the generator, then you had some gear, or even your pack, and you have it set up, with the battery backup and all that stuff, what, you know, basically like how far you can reach and what you can do.
Yeah, and that's also part of my motivation for the project I'm working on is the fact that, like, I can't see myself ever putting up a really tall tower in the backyard because, you know, hurricanes, high winds, trees falling. I don't have to go back through everything I lived through during Hurricane Ida. But let's say I had 100 or 150 foot tower in the backyard. That damn thing would have been sitting on my house after Ida, you know. So, like, that's just not going to happen. But what I do think there is, you know, a good discussion to be had is for the person who says, I want post-emergency off-grid communications. And in that case, something like, you know, something like a 20-watt mobile or even a 50-watt mobile that you can run off of a battery or you can run off of a Jackery or something, run off a solar setup. You can take an antenna and string it up into a tree, and you can punch a pretty reasonable distance with a very simple setup that you can put up and take down and not have to be the radio nerd with the 100-foot tower in your backyard. Mm-hmm. Like, no offense to the radio nerds among us. It's just that, like, I imagine that there's a large percent of our listeners that look at this like they do most other things. Like, it is for the utility that I am interested in it. It's not for the hobby necessarily. So I don't think there's a lot of people that amongst our listenership that'd be super interested in, like, you know, putting up a tower and all that. But I do imagine there's quite a few that'd be like, I would like to know how to get an antenna up in a tree after the power's out so I can talk to a person further away than I can by shouting at them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's where I see a lot of this getting really, really useful really, really quickly. But
yeah.
So, Sam, back to what you were talking about earlier, when we kind of nudged you away from a person that, like, a person is just beginning. Where do you think they're going to wind up if they get, quote unquote, serious about amateur radio? Like, you know, what I know that progression, if I'm judging it based off of my own, it's start with handhelds or HTs. Usually they wind up getting a mobile shoved into their vehicle because that's the next step down this gateway drug. Where does a person end up? I mean, once they get much past that entry level.
I fear they'll end up like me, trying to really push the low wattage as far as I can. I do see a lot of guys getting into HF. There's a lot of like data that people can push through HF. The Tech Prepper on Instagram and YouTube is a fantastic example of that. He has like an entire blog that he does through HF radio and just pushing, you know, data packets. GPS with radio is also one of those next big steps. Like my AC radio has GPS in it that I've been trying to figure out for a while.
Yaesu is a pretty, they're crazy.
The Yaesu FTM200 actually has it where in the little screen, it'll actually point me in the direction of whatever station I'm receiving from. So,
oh, wow.
In the little screen when I'm picking up or Peter 50 miles or whatever away, it can actually point me towards it like you go to the direction finding radio. How it works, I do not know.
That's interesting because it, I mean, you know, that you think about triangulation and everything, and then that just is like, hey, go left. Like, go this way, you know, and then I'm assuming, you know, as you start getting closer, or if you turn the wrong direction or something, you know, it'll do something, but, or show something different, or point you in the right direction. But yeah, that's just interesting for thinking about triangulation, or even, you know, you think apocalypse scenario kind of thing, and everybody's all paranoid about the government, triangulating their position for some reason. I mean, you got to think about the other people that are out there that are just listening to what your conversation is, over the radio. And then there, if it, you know, your radio is able to say, hey, go this way, the amount of people that it's people that are going to get able to find.
Yeah, when you get into like direction finding with radios, it, it can turn out to be pretty easy. Mm-hmm. One of the big things we did back in high school was like fox hunts with radios.
Yeah.
Super fun. And all you need is a directional antenna. That's all you need. Hmm. And you just follow the breadcrumb trail.
Hmm. That and an attenuator for when you get a little too close.
Yep. But once you use like SDRs are pretty cool. Mm-hmm. You can use those to look at where people are talking without ever being on a radio.
Hmm.
That's my next big project I'm working on is getting an SDR set up on an old like factory blank Android phone and then having that connected to a directional antenna.
Hmm. That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing that's worth pointing out, since we just tripped over that subject of like, people are nervous about how do I prevent someone being able to find me with a directional antenna, like literally fox hunting me. But the other thing I point out, and this is covered in NC Scout's book really, really well, where he talks a lot. He has, I think, a whole big chunk of the book is all about communication security. But he talks directly about the fact that, like, you will give yourself away just by what you communicate over the radio. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you...
Yeah.
Take my town, for example. If I were to talk to my wife, key up on frequency and say, hey, where are you? And she said, I'm at the Walmart. Guess what? You have a 1 in 2 chance of figuring out where she is based on that one piece of information. Because there's only 2 Walmarts in the town. Mm-hmm. So it's, okay, 3 if you want to go like way up north of us. But the point is, it's like, you know, people just don't think about, people get all wrapped around the axle about, what if I key up and somebody has a directional antenna and an attenuator and they can figure out what direction I'm in? And I'm like, what happens if the person you're talking about doesn't understand the basis of communication security and they tell everybody who happens to be listening, which could be anybody, what street corner I'm sitting at? You know what I'm saying? Like it's funny to me because I see a lot of the same parallel as like the conversations I had to have with my daughter about like internet security and about, you know, like when we were young, we always got told like, don't talk to strangers. And with my daughter playing online games, we've had to talk about, don't tell people your age, your gender. You can tell them your first name. That's it. They don't need to know your last name. They don't need to know what city or state you live in. Like, tell them nothing. And I've literally sat there and watched people through these, you know, try to chat with my daughter while she was playing like Among Us and stuff and say, hey, where are you? And she'll say Earth. And just like totally shot, like, dude, I'm telling you, I've seen her go back and forth with somebody like 12 or 11 messages. Where are you? Where do you live? Earth. How old are you? Older than 1. I mean, just give them the most bullcrap answers because she's already been told they're going to try to extract information from you. Don't let them. I cringe if anybody ever tries to interrogate this little girl. She's going to have them ready to jump out a freaking window because she's been trained to do this from a young age to give circuitous answers. But I think that's a conversation worth having about it. It kind of goes back to what you were saying earlier, Sam, is that like when you pick up a radio and you key up, there is no privacy. Whatever you pump out into the airwaves, somebody could be hearing. And I feel like people get a preconceived notion in their head about, well, I need to avoid this, I need to avoid that. And then I point out to them, like, you need to avoid saying things on the open airwaves that lets people find you or identify you if you don't want to be identified or found.
Well, right. And as long as you know, practice those rules and you just take a second to think about however many frequencies are out there. There's a lot of frequencies that it's going to be really hard to find you if they got no information.
Mm. Kind of like have reasonable expectations.
Yeah.
So what, I mean, before we start wrapping up, I mean, I guess we got about 10 minutes or so, but, I mean, we talked about mistakes that some people make. What's one of your mistakes that, you look back now on your journey through ham? And, you know, we always say that people, you know, basically Phil and I, this whole podcast, we always tell people, you know, learn from our mistakes. What's something that a mistake that you made that you wish you could go back to yourself and be like, hey, no, don't do that? Or do you tell people, you know, don't do something?
For me, there's been a few times where we were going to rely on our radios for like communication, and then either myself or one of my friends didn't do the beforehand prep.
Mm-hmm.
If I had to go back every time, I'd make sure that that happens every time. Batteries are charged, frequencies are in, it's ready to go. You know, turn on your radio to talk, and then the radio doesn't turn on. That's always been my big thing, is making sure everything is ready beforehand.
This sounds like somebody has been guilty of not planning ahead, and it bit him in the ass before.
Way too many times, my friend.
As long as you learn from it eventually, we'll count it as a win. But I think that's important, though. I mean, because you are an instructor, and I think that's important for an instructor to say, hey, I did this. It bit me in the ass. Don't do that. Like, don't learn from my mistake. Don't learn the hard way from my mistake. Just take my word on it. It's a bad idea, and don't do it. But I think that's, like, super refreshing because, you know, you talked about the gun community earlier, the firearms community. I don't want to say as a whole, because it's not as a whole, but there are a lot of instructors in the firearms community that are very guilty of this. They only want to show themselves in the best possible light. They never want to admit they make mistakes or be seen to make mistakes. And I just think it's super important to, like, you know, square up with your students and tell them, hey, I goofed up. It bit me in the butt. Don't do that. Learn from my mistakes. Do it this way, because I think this way works better. And, like, you try to make sure that your students don't have to tread over the same broken ground you did to get to where you are. Like, you want them to stand on your shoulders and go further than you did.
Agreed. 100%.
So for anybody, if you're in Michigan, or honestly, if you just want to travel, MDFI is hosting you. And so they have right now, they got two classes. One Saturday, May 11th in Mount Pleasant, and then another one Saturday, September 15th in Baldwin, Michigan. It doesn't look like the Mount Pleasant one is sold out yet, and it does not look like the Baldwin one is sold out yet either. So yeah, get in on these. And you said that Barracks has reached out to you too.
Yep. Yeah, those should be in there hopefully soon. So gotta get all that worked out.
Yeah. So Barracks 616. Anybody familiar with Grand Rapids area? It's a firearm range that you can indoor firearm range you can go to. But they also have host classes as well. So you can go in there and Trek goes in there. MDFI teaches in there quite a bit. And I think they do have a few other places, another couple other companies that come in. But if anybody is interested in your ham radio Baofeng basics, you guys can all go to trainmdfi.com. And then if you go to courses at the top, under hosted courses, it's ham radio Baofeng basics. So, and actually, oops, that's the land navigation one, not that one. So courses, ham radio, Baofeng basics, but, so you can go to that, or you can go to northernwoodstraining.com. That's actually where the class is being held, is up at the Northern Woods Training Facility. Now that Trek has. So, Are you on YouTube? Have you thought about doing a YouTube channel for this kind of stuff? Or is it just, do you think that it's just, there's so much out there already that it's not even worth it?
I've thought about it, and I'm probably going to in the future. Mm-hmm. I've started working on a few things, but it's not out there yet, but it will be.
All right. Well, where can people find you if they want to bug you or if they want to follow you on anything?
They can find me on Instagram. It's at TONKS_FAL for an old gun I used to have. Nice. You can hit me up on there. I'm also, yeah, that's actually it.
Okay.
Easy button. I'll have that down in the show description. And I mean, insofar as, you know, anybody that wants to learn more about ham radio, I encourage them to go and avail themselves of the knowledge, because the scariest thing someone can say to me is, I'll figure it out when I need it. Because in my experience, everybody that's ever said, I'll figure it out, usually doesn't figure it out when there's things like adrenaline and fear and everything else involved. So I wholeheartedly encourage you to go take Sam's class or a class in ham radio or read the frickin' book or ask questions or do something. But Sam, I'm glad you came on, because I really feel like we have to start taking this subject that, you know, the title of the show is Comms is Still Sorcery, which is kind of a good-natured jab at a friend of ours that has said comms is sorcery over and over and over. But I think we have to start demystifying it a little bit. Like, people in the preparedness community really need to take hold of this subject and start figuring it out. And at least to the degree they feel like they have to, they need to start putting some things in place so that they can have a communications plan with people they need to communicate with.
Couldn't agree more.
All right. Well, we'll go ahead and roll this one up so I can go take some, I can go kiss the green fairy on the lips and drown myself in NyQuil while Andrew makes fun of me for having a man cold. So, Matter of Facts podcast heading out the door. If you want to take Sam's class, check out trainmdfi.com. If you want to harass him on Instagram, it's tonks_foul, and I'll have all that in the show description. And we'll talk to y'all another week. Bye, everybody.
See ya.
See ya.